On October the 7th, 2023, the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement, or Hamas, launched a surprise attack on Israel. Israel's military response was swift. Before long, the fighting had spread throughout the Gaza Strip and the West Bank of Palestine. The latest conflict is the most severe in the region since the Lebanon War in 1982. It has had a devastating impact on the lives of millions of Palestinians.
The invaders show us no mercy. They're bombing us day and night. Is this how we are supposed to live?
He inherited the land from his father. He planted all these olive trees, and that's where he was killed.
We're in constant danger. The occupiers often storm enduring classes.
The Israeli occupation is a nightmare. They arrest our fathers and brothers and kill our friends. But it's precisely this treatment that breeds revolutionaries. They resist the Israeli occupation and any form of injustice.
These people are from different places in Palestine, including Gaza and the West Bank. But now they're in a similar situation, caught between life and death. Yair Bonzo, an Israeli veteran and anti-war activist, says what's happening right now between Israel and Palestine is a repeat of history.
People always say the circumstances never repeat themselves. History never repeats the same story like the previous stories. But it has been changed. It's definitely a shock. We're talking about brutality against tens of thousands of Palestinians and Israeli civilians on the 7th of October that had never experienced in any of the war.
Since the outbreak of the conflict on October the 7th, Israeli military operations in Gaza have resulted in over 35,000 deaths and 79,000 injuries. A blockade has caused a shortage of supplies, including medicines, leading to the death of many of those injured. Dr. Metasem Said Salah is the director of the Health Emergency Operations Center, Gaza Ministry of Health.
All the hospitals have been attacked. Virtually every medical facility has shut down. 52 medical centers have been closed after being attacked. Both local government agencies and United Nations Relief and Work Agency have been affected. The entire emergency response system is paralyzed. Some 350,000 sick people are facing imminent death due to the lack of medical services. There are no medicines, no means of conducting examinations, and treatment is impossible. Then there's the psychological effect. The elderly, women and children are experiencing terrible stress. Thousands of people are suffering from trauma due to the continuous bombing. Add to that the rampant spread of disease and epidemics throughout Gaza. For example, respiratory disease, skin disease, and hepatitis C are spreading in the unsanitary conditions. The medical system's inability to function is making the situation much worse.
For civilians in Gaza, life is extremely hard.
You hear explosions like this all the time. Every 4 or 5 minutes, there's one. That doesn't include the tank shells and airstrikes. They bombard residential areas. Buildings are leveled in an instant. Homes are being destroyed. All we can do is grab our children and run for our lives. But now they're even attacking the school, again and again.
To escape the attacks on Gaza City, many homeless Palestinians have sought refuge at an United Nations Relief and Work Agency affiliated school in Al Daraj. As one of the largest shelters in the area, the school has 69 classrooms and 19 tents, which currently house 3,600 Palestinians from 460 families, including some 1,700 children. Fatma Soka is one of these refugees.
Amid the fighting, my child was born. There was no milk, no food.
and she was in poor health while she was still in the nursery. It must have been October 8th. The Israelis attacked it. Many of the babies were hurt, but she escaped unscathed. She was one of the children who survived. We were living in the center of Liwa. We were having dinner and resting at home. Suddenly, missiles and phosphorus bombs started raining down. The planes were firing indiscriminately. The bombing didn't stop. We grabbed some water and fled in panic.
However, this was just the beginning of the suffering for the family. Things didn't get better during their search for shelter.
Since we moved into the school, things haven't got much better. The conditions here are getting tougher and tougher. We've never experienced anything like this. Adults and children, we're all suffering. We're suffering from disease and lack clean drinking water, all because of the war. This is our life now.
Another civilian in Gaza says they now have to endure food shortages, contaminated water, and homelessness. They are under immense psychological stress.
We are losing hope. We've forgotten what a normal life is like. The hours are filled with endless artillery fire. Who can we turn to for help? Besides praying, what other hope do we have? The world has forgotten us.
According to the United Nations, Gaza's entire population is facing a severe food crisis, escalating the risk of famine. But why is this conflict far from over, and what are the roots of the conflict? We speak to several people from Palestine and Israel, trying to find answers. Munther Amira is a Palestinian human rights activist and social worker at the Aida camp, a Palestinian refugee camp in the West Bank. He recalls his hunting experiences.
I remember the day the Israeli occupying forces broke in and destroyed our home. They stormed into my mother's house. They beat up my brother and dragged him to our house. He was beaten unconscious. Then they attacked us as well. They beat me up in front of my daughter. My son was wearing a shirt with a map of Palestine on it. They even slashed his shirt with a knife. There was nothing I could do. That's when my nightmares began.
Munther Amira is well known across Palestine for his non-violent activism against the Israeli occupation. After the outbreak of fighting on October the 7th, he was arrested by the Israeli occupying forces.
It was a military camp. Along the way, I was humiliated and abused. At around 3 in the morning, soldiers stormed into the room where we were being held. They handcuffed us all and threw us into a corner. Then they sent a big dog in. It was about this big. It savaged us. The guards also punched and kicked us. They did this every morning at 6. Sometimes it even started at 4 in the morning. They constantly hurled abuse at us. Every time, 20 guards would come in with 2 dogs. We were made to kneel and not look them in the eye. Behind those iron bars, you couldn't resist. I lost all my rights as a human being.
Munther Amira says he lost 33 kilograms in prison.
It was winter, very cold. They gave us very little food. Not enough even for a small child. Most of the time, it was undercooked. I thought that if they didn't shoot me, I'd die of fright or be suffocated by my anger and helplessness. I was angry at myself, angry at the guards, angry at the world. But there was nothing I could do. I was alone. I prayed that the birds could bring me news of my family. Had the war in Gaza ended, that prison felt more like a grave. The giant gates were the gates of hell.
According to statistics from the Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs and the Palestinian Prisoners Society, between October the 7th, 2023 and May the 16th, 2024, over 8,700 Palestinians were detained by the Israeli military, many of them activists. Israeli veteran Yair Banzo says this round of conflict between Israel and Hamas is much worse than the previous conflicts.
Situation where you have millions of people especially in Gaza, but also in the West Bank, that are under huge pressure. It's not just the boiling water, it's a pressure cooker. It's sealed and the energy has nowhere to go. It must explode. Many of us knew that, including the government, and refused to act in the right direction. Lowering the fire is not solving anything. It just takes longer for the thing to explode.
Yair Bonzo is a member of an organization formed by Israeli veterans and Palestinian civilians. The organization has been calling for an end to the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians for the past 7 years.
I was born in Israel in 1962. Both of my parents came to Israel, Palestine, and they are both Holocaust survivors. I joined the army because it's compulsory. There was back then no question about joining or not joining the army. But what kind of service one chooses to do is a lot connected to that. So I had volunteered to the paratroopers. I was involved in the war in Lebanon during my regular service in 1982. To join the paratroopers was very much influenced by that kind of education decades ago, and still today, be willing to sacrifice your life, basically, for the security of your family.
Yair Bonzo says the dangers of being a paratrooper were very concrete.
My friends had experienced very, very brutal scenes, and of course it does scratch something in your heart when you see all this damage and you see the enemy lying dead.
When talking about his friend from the battlefield, he shows a picture taken during the Lebanon War.
This was taken in the 1980 or 1981, probably. It's a friend, came from Argentina, which I'm still in close contact until today, more than 40 years. He was not physically hurt, but he experienced very traumatic experiences to carry your friend's body on your shoulder. A lot of blood from your dead friend that you carry on your shoulder, that is his experience.
The olive tree is often considered the symbol of Palestine, as they are a major agricultural crop in the Palestinian territories and have been a key component of the Palestinian economy. However, in the midst of human misery and crisis in Gaza, some other tragedies have unfolded under the olive trees in the West Bank. 42-year-old Bilal Saleh had an olive grove in Al Sawiya village, West Bank. However, he ended up losing his life in that place. Ikhlas Hamid Saleh is his widow.
Bilal loved farming. He had his own piece of land. He worked in the fields every day. He inherited the land from his father. He planted all these olive trees. That's where he was killed. It was far from any Israeli settlement. We only went there to work. That day, when we went there, he'd almost finished working. We were preparing to start work as usual. Then, suddenly, the attack came, and everyone was scared. Everyone was in a panic. All the streets were on fire. The main road was under attack. The traffic was paralyzed. After the Israeli troops left, we returned to our normal lives. Then Saturday came. Someone said things would be much better than on the first day. But around 9 o'clock, it happened again. I heard a young man in the street shouting, "The Israelis are coming." A lot of people were wounded. A while later, we met some people who said the Israeli troops had withdrawn. It seemed things were returning to normal. We thought the chaos was over. Bilal believed we were out of danger, so we prepared to go back. But suddenly, he remembered he'd left his phone behind. He told the children, "I'm going back to get my phone." A few minutes later, I heard gunshots.
Sami Shahin is a friend of the victim, Bilal Saleh.
I was driving along the road. I saw some Israeli settlers on the hillside to my right. I immediately turned around and got out of my car to see what was happening. I saw Bilal and his brother Abu Fadi in the distance. They were being attacked by a group of Israeli settlers. I shouted at them to run. An Israeli settler walked up to them. Then they shot Bilal. After they left, we hurried over.
He was lying face down on the ground. When we turned him over, I saw his face. He'd been shot many times and was covered in blood. I couldn't believe that person was my husband. The Israelis were firing warning shots into the air. The farmers near us scattered.
It was October 28th. The whole village mourned Bilal's death. He'd been working at the school. He was highly respected in the village. He cared deeply about the children's education. He always tried to protect the school and the students from the Israeli incursions.
The Al Sawiya village is located between three Israeli settlements. Sami Shahin is said to have lost his friend, and adds that teachers in the village are all under immense pressure.
Because we're not only responsible for the education of students, but also for keeping them safe. This is the route the students usually take to school. They no longer use the main school gate. To protect the students from danger, from the conflict, the village committee had this road built. This gate opens onto the main street. The Israeli occupying forces sealed it. They welded it shut from the outside. You can see the marks from the welding on the outside. But later we unsealed it. Since then, we've kept the gate locked from the inside. We want to tell them this place belongs to us. You've no right to do whatever you want here.
Sami says the school is very close to an Israeli settlement. There is one about 3 kilometers away.
This school's long been under threat from the Israeli occupying forces. Sometimes they even come with their guns and rest outside the gate. They also fly drones over the school. Once they arrested a student, they falsely accused him of throwing stones at a drone. But he hadn't done anything. He'd just been walking home. We're living under daily threat from guns. Danger has become part of our lives. But I always teach them to be strong, to learn to protect themselves. It's my responsibility as a teacher and as a father.
Sami's three sons are classmates with the son of Bilal, who says he misses his dad very much.
My father often took us to tidy the yard. We'd also go out to play together. He'd take us swimming in the river. Those were really happy times. But now we've got nothing. I loved my father very much. I believe that in the future, we'll be reunited in heaven.
Since Bilal's death, his wife Ikhlas has been caring for the children with the help of her mom. Although they have filed a lawsuit against the Israeli murderers, they have yet to hear anything from the court.
We think about Bilal all the time. It's as if he never left us. During a school lesson, they drew a picture. In it, their father is lying there. People are lifting him up. They often dream about their father. Especially during Ramadan, they miss him a lot. Bilal used to celebrate the holidays with them, but now, it's all just a memory. I hope that we Palestinians can gain peace, that we can live in safety like people in other countries, no longer prevented from praying at Al-Aqsa Mosque, no longer prevented from traveling in our own country. I hope we can achieve peace and stability soon.
For years, Israeli veteran Yair Bonzo has been committed to calling attention to the plight of both Palestinians and Israelis.
Every war is brutal. Civilians are always paying the price. Every dead, injured, mentally or psychologically hurt person is a damage for generations. Not just the person himself, he will give it to his children as well. In the end, you have to shut down the fire. And shutting down the fire means you sit with your enemy and you really search for a solution. Not just to gain time. Gaining time is not strategic to solve a conflict between two nations like we live in for 100 years and more.
Yarbanzo says he is confident that there will be peace in the Middle East one day, as most of the wars and conflicts based on national feelings are solved slowly.
Jerusalem. The word Yerushalayim has the word shalom in it, but it was hardly ever a city of peace. I'm absolutely sure that Palestinian nation and the Jewish nation will find a way to bring peace to Jerusalem and actually to the whole region. Don't look back. Look where you're going.